This morning, as many of you know, there was a plant tour that was conducted at Diablo Canyon. I'd ask for any member comments relative to that tour this morning, if anyone would like to say something.
I'll just say that Ellie Ripley once again did a great job, and I thought the tour went very well.
And the support at the plant site for it was also excellent.
Okay, fine, thank you. Also at this point in time, I would ask if there are any members of the public who would like to stand and make any comments. Come right ahead.
Thank you.
Please give us your name.
Jill Zamek. I'm with the San Luis Obispo Mothers for Peace.
Thank you.
And I would like to communicate with you some allegations that we received from a PG&E worker. This was written by Morgan Rafferty from the Mothers for Peace. I'm submitting the following allegations of safety problems at the Diablo County Nuclear Power Plant based on upon information I received recently from workers at the site. One, workers perceive that raising safety concerns carries a high likelihood of retaliation by management. These perceptions are based on incidents such as the poor performance evaluation, and name removed, of course, received after he filed a differing professional opinion, DPO, regarding instrument set point methodology inadequacies for the replacement steam generators. The DPO process substantiated all or the majority of workers' issues, yet he still received a downgraded performance appraisal because he was not a team player. This episode and others like them caused a chilling effect in which workers fear raising safety concerns out of fear of retaliation. Two, workers have lost trust in the employee concerns group and lack confidence that this group conducts fair, unbiased, and appropriately confidential inquiries of workers' concerns. And three, PG&E is filling supervisor and manager positions at Diablo Canyon with individuals that do not meet the required qualifications for the positions. For example, the last two individuals to have filled the Director of Quality Assurance position did not meet the prescribed qualifications, so PG&E altered the final safety analysis section text to match their lesser backgrounds. Four, PG&E is once again violating 10 CFR Part 50 Appendix B by failing to promptly correct known deficiencies in the containment fan cooler units. An inspection report 204-5 dated February 11, 2005, the NRC identified a non-cited violation of 10 CFR Part 50 Appendix B for, quote, failure to promptly correct reverse rotation of containment fan cooler units for both Units 1 and 2, end quote. A condition report was recently written on Diablo Canyon Unit 2 when an operator observed that non-operating containment fan cooler Unit 22, CFCU 22, was rotating in the reverse direction at about 35 revolutions per minute. The system engineer investigated and determined to be rotating in the reverse direction because one half of the backdraft damper was open. The damper was closed by starting CFCU 22. Once the damper was closed, CFCU 22 was shut down. The condition report noted that PG&E had deferred the permanent fix to the problem, anti-reverse rotations couplings project, until 2010 for budgetary reasons. At my request, David Lockbaum with the Union of Concerned Scientists reviewed the information I received from the Diablo Canyon workers and helped me identify the specific allegations within the materials. We sent this to the NRC, and their response on May 8th was, an evaluation of these concerns should normally be completed within 6 months, although complex issues may take longer. So I wanted to share this with you, and I'll leave these documents with you.
I just want to ask whether there, besides what you just left with us, are there any other documents besides what you've just left that could help us understand more?
No, I don't have any other documents.
Okay. Thank you.
Not that I'm aware of, no. I'm not the author. Morgan Rafferty's the author.
And they've been good years. And I first toured Diablo, courtesy of a friend of mine who was an operator there about 16 or 17 years ago. I was privileged to go into the simulator control room and was familiarized with the operation. And to make a long story short, at the end of a couple hours I spent there, I come out of there thinking this is a $5 billion BMW or Mercedes-Benz. I was exceedingly impressed with the workmanship, the oversight, the quality of the plant, the quality of the people, the interest in the people personally took in their jobs. I've never seen a team like this myself. And I just wanted to add this because certain newspapers in this county, certain people seem to be constantly on the attack level with no reasonable alternative. They seem to see no good, only conspiratorial forces acting against whatever. I just want to say I'm a believer and a member of the public. There are a lot of folks like me who believe in this plant, this operation, your people, and the integrity of the plant. And I just wanted to say, we may be a silent majority. We don't come up in the Telegram Tribune or be on the 6 o'clock news, as Channel 6 said last night, Mothers for Peace want to close the plant. That's a quote from the Channel 6 news last night. I do not understand this sort of mentality, this sort of reporting from anonymous sources. And I think that I have very little respect for those engaged in destructive, constant, annoying criticism. I personally think, this may be aside from it, that we ought to forget about coal, do what France does, 100% nuclear. That's just my humble opinion. I thank you, gentlemen, for listening.
Could I ask you before you leave, could you spell your last name?
Yeah. Surely. C-I-N. O-W-A-L-T, first name Roy.
Thank you very much for your comments. I just wanted to make one correction for those who may be observing this on television. You made the statement in talking about the capabilities of the people at the plant, and you referred to them as our people. And I want to make sure you understand they are not our people. We're an independent committee. They're their people. So I guess they will accept what you said, and I just wanted to correct it for the record. We're at the point now in our consent agenda, and the first issue we'd like to deal with is the minutes of the January 23rd and 24th, 2008 meeting. And I guess the usual custom, Furman, is for you to go over those. Some of us may have already made comments, and I have, and I'll just give them to Bob.
Sure.
But why don't you go ahead, Furman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bob, are you coming back?
Yeah, I'm coming back.
Okay.
Getting the rainbow back.
Right. I'll go through the pages, Bob, if you'll take notes, because you'll make the corrections anyway.
I did get your email also with some.
Excellent. I see Bill or someone's handing you some comments. I would direct the committee's attention to the pink sheets in the rainbow packet. These contain the minutes of the January, proposed minutes of the January 2008 public meeting. I think what we'll do is go page by page. And I'd ask that any significant comments be noted here on the record, any typos, minor corrections, misspellings, etc., not be discussed now, but given to Bob separately. And as Bob just mentioned, I sent him via email a few days or almost a week ago my comments, so I will not interject those here. All right, let's look at page one. Let's go about type A numbers of three. One, two, or three. How about that? Four, five, six. Seven, eight, nine. Ten, 11, 12. Am I going too fast? 13, 14, 15. 12, you're batting 1,000 so far.
So far, so good.
Except for the comments I sent you.
Right.
16, 17, 18.
Furman, I think we all have editorial comments, but we're not going to take up time just for those editorial comments. We'll just give those to Bob.
Correct. 35, 36.
You did good.
And that is the last page. So maybe each person could scan their comments quickly just to be sure.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move to accept the minutes with a proviso that minor typos will be accepted that don't have any content implications.
I accept the proviso.
Fine. We have a motion made and seconded. Those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Minutes are approved with the proviso as stated. Bob, when you get finished with your paperwork, I would ask you to provide an update on financial matters.
No. These minutes go onto the website and also into the annual report, just as a matter of routine, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're available to the public.
Yes.
Yeah, they're not posted separately to the website, other than as part of the annual report.
Part of the annual report.
Yeah. They are part of the annual report, and that is on the website. That's correct. With the agenda packet that was sent out for this meeting, we have the accountant's financial statement through the date June 17, 2008. We have received two of the quarterly grant payments, so we are current through the end of June. An invoice has been provided for the third quarter, and the balance for the committee at this time is a little over $132,000. I'd point out that we are going to be entering into our annual report review period, so that's usually an intensive time for labor as well as hours. But it does appear at this time that the committee has sufficient funds on deposit to continue the activities as planned for this year. And I can answer any questions if anybody has any questions on the financial statements.
Are there any questions? No questions. Okay, at this time I'd like... Yes?
No.
Okay. At this time I'd like to take up the issue of consultant compensation. There had been some discussion previously recognizing the fact that consultants had not had an increase in their compensation for the past 3 years. I'd like to offer a motion to advance the rate from 165 to 185. And I would ask for a second to my motion, if that's available.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That's approved, Bob.
Okay. If I could ask one question, when do we want to make the rate effective?
I would offer July 1.
July 1?
Yeah. Basically, no. I mean, just next week.
July 1.
July 1.
Still. Okay.
We run on a July 1 year, right?
We do.
Yes. Okay. So that's a nice...
We do for the annual report. Our annual report period is our financial year.
We elect the chairman for the July 1 and so on.
That's correct.
That's a logical thing.
We're at the point where we should discuss the open items list, and Fairman, again, I would ask you to take the lead on that.
Before we do that, could I ask... we do have the matter of the grant refund.
Go right ahead.
2007.
Go right ahead.
The committee finished calendar year 2007 within the grant for that year, and as has been our past custom, when that is the case, then we refund to PG&E for the ratepayers, the balance of the grant unexpended for that calendar year. And a motion at this time would be in order. If the committee has any questions, I'd be glad to try to answer them.
Questions for Bob?
Yeah. We won't know the amount of that until the books are closed, right?
Right. The books aren't closed. Diana's closed the books for 2007.
That's a calendar year.
That's calendar.
That's calendar year. The financial year is calendar. Yeah.
Okay.
I move that we approve the returning of the unexpended funds.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. Those in favor? Aye. Opposed?
Right.
Checks in the mail. Now, Fenman, we can discuss the open items list, if you would.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will direct the committee's attention to the green pages in the rainbow packet. And as I've done before, what I'll do here is go through page by page. I'll highlight significant changes on the pages, particularly items that we're closing or deleting or have a question on. And it's our traditional list, and it's been updated at the very back end, incorporating any actions, items recorded or promised in the last public meeting. Two. Basically, nothing substantial on page two. I would add that halfway down under item EP2 bill, I will be observing the emergency evaluation, the evaluated emergency exercise on October
29th. Just say that again. You're going to be observing it?
Bill Conway and I will.
Yeah.
We have a fact-binding schedule for that date.
So you've scheduled that?
Yes.
Great.
Yes. We should maybe talk a little bit about the presentation that was made by the gentleman yesterday relative to the use of the MIDAS code. That is an EP situation. And I think we at least briefly indicated yesterday that a very soon-to-be-conducted fact-finding, someone would take a look at that.
Yes.
And we're coming in July, so that might be an opportunity to do it then.
I think we should try to get this information to PG&E and get them prepared to talk to us in July.
Is that okay with you people?
Well, just to say, Booker and I are going to be there in August, and if you can't do it in July for one or another reason,
we'll pass it off to you.
We'll be there.
Okay. Good.
But we want to try to at least get something behind it before you guys go in October to that thing, I think.
Yeah. Right. Well, let's see what the results of the fact finding to show.
In
that,
fact,
that
Bob Budnitz and I, we did look at a related. We did look at MIDAS, the program he talked about during our May fact finding meeting, which I'm going to talk about in a little while. So it might be good that Bob does this. We can work it out. Sounds like we have a plan and a backup plan. Okay. Anything else on page two?
I just want to observe that RA5. We reviewed that in February, and it's going to be a report that we're going to give soon. It was agreed when we did that review that it would be timely to do it again at the end of the calendar year because they were in the middle of doing a fire PRA upgrade and a shutdown analysis, which would, they told us, be complete by the end of the calendar year.
Right, and if you look in the very right-hand column, I've scheduled our next action as a fact finding in the first quarter of 2009. Is that satisfactory? Or do you
yes. Well, we'll have to. Yes, obviously, we'll talk to them, and if it isn't done yet, we'll. But we want to go after that as soon as they're done with it.
Early 2009.
That's correct.
I agree. Thanks. Okay, I'm getting ready to move to page three. Page three, about halfway down, item OE-5, supervisor effectiveness efforts and training. I just questioned, do we want to keep that item? Is that something we do we want to keep it on the list or not? We don't look at it very often.
Yep. We've talked about this from time to time. This is the kind of thing that an occasional committee visit isn't going to really add much to understanding. I think if we're going to look into this, it really is going to take quite a bit of a different kind of effort. And I would close it. Once again, if you ever see any reason to put it back in, you can do it.
Yeah, I don't have any problems closing it.
All right. We'll close it. You'll notice item SG6 down near the bottom is a review of steam generator tube inspections. And of course, they're not going to be any anytime soon. So
I think I thought they said yesterday that they do a full baseload inspection the next outage, which would be 2R15.
He did say that, yeah.
2R15.
So it probably ought to do that after they do that one.
What was the question?
When's the next steam generator tube inspection?
I believe what Jim said, and I can't speak to this personally, but I believe they were going to do an initial inspection, and then depending on the outcome of that, the expected duration between inspections will be longer with the new generators.
Yeah, I think he said 3 years.
Yes.
Two or possibly three. Okay, so 2R15 would be the next, or the first inspection. We'll put that date in for now. I had 2R17, but that's wrong. It's 2R15.
Before we leave the category above, that last item on containment fan cooler unit mods, you've got an italics. Now, it seems to me that this is...
with a significant problem item. And it sort of grew into something a little bit more than what the original intent. And I say that because I was the one who expressed an interest, I guess, in finding out whether the senior organization or the senior part of the organization had a direct hand in making health committee decisions on certain items, significant items, if you will, that should be done. What is their knowledge, if you will, with respect to health committee actions? And it's been very, very difficult, speaking personally, to try to reach that conclusion. And I guess, seeing as how I brought it up, I would offer to have it closed contingent on me directly interacting with some senior members of the organization and asking them directly the question. That seems to me to be the most reasonable and hopeful solution to something like this, because it's a difficult one to get your hands around. I would offer that up as a suggestion. I would recommend closing it and making it a sort of a personal item to directly speak to the senior management personnel and ask them to define for me.
I'm comfortable with that.
Thank you.
All right, I'll call that bill, and I'll put that in the list here. Right, page 4. I'll direct your attention to item SC2 near the top, fourth of the way down, to close. This was a discrepancy in the United States Geological Survey preliminary report on the San Simeon earthquake. And basically, that report had not been completed at the time we looked at it initially. Bob Budnitz and I, in our MAFAC finding, found that report had been resolved with the USGS, so I think we can now close this item. Bob, would you concur?
Yes, I think what we learned would close it.
Very good.
The new item, SC4, is they're undertaking a pretty large new study of tsunami risk that Lloyd Clough's group is running. And we learned about it in May, and we want to follow it about a year from now.
Right. We'll report on that in just a few minutes.
And that's the new item there.
Right. That's correct. That's all I had really on that page that I thought was significant. Other just minor changes.
And partially, the tsunami's coming from Alaska or Chile or Japan. And they have this slumping phenomenon on the coastal mark on the continent.
Are we ready to go to page 5?
No, a big landslide from an earthquake.
Now, page 5 begins the action or open items from previous public meetings. And the first one there, the 10/05 PM 1.
Chairman, excuse me just a minute. Before we get there, take a look at TR 1.
Say that again, Bill. TR
1. TR 1.
Follow the PG&E transformation at the applicant.
I guess I'm questioning in my own mind how we best do that. And maybe I should ask PG&E representatives, are transformation activities still being undertaken at Diablo Canyon?
The Nexus project that was discussed yesterday in various presentations is really the major piece of transformation that affects Diablo Canyon. So that implementation is set for the beginning of September this year. Mm-hmm. So that is ongoing.
Are there other activities going on besides that under the transformation program?
There are some limited activities that have been implemented company-wide, mainly around supply chain processes that we are using to varying degrees at the station, the same as the rest of the company, but the real big chunk is this Nexus project that will switch us over to the SAP system.
And that project, Bill, we're following separately.
I was going to say, that being the case, is there really a need to continue to carry this identification of transformation?
Doesn't sound like there's much.
I've not really heard much conversation about transformation.
No.
And I guess that gets me back to where I was. I would recommend that we close this. We're following Nexus as it is. That would be my thought.
We'll do that. We'll close TR1 and follow Nexus separately. In fact, it's already on the list here somewhere.
It's on the list.
Yeah.
It's fine.
All right. Good. Good comment, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Others on page 4.
Herman, I think we can close at 10:06, public meeting number 11.
All right, I'm at 10:05 PM 1 right now, the one above that. Page 5 for the first full item. That's the tsunami report. Well, we already agreed to close that, didn't we?
Isn't that covered by the other one that you just... the open item that you just put together?
Right. Jim, that was in your June 07 fact-finding report, if I recall. And,
They entered the NCVs, non-conformance reports, into the non-cited violations, pardon me, into their AR program, and they track them through the AR program.
I would ask you and Dave, who did that fact-finding, would we close this item based on what you found in your report?
I'm lost again.
Was that Dave or was that Peterson?
That was Pear.
Yeah, I thought so.
Oh, Pear, okay.
Yeah, it was Jim and Pear, yeah.
All right, excuse me. Sorry about that. Well, Jim?
Yeah, I'm recommending we close it.
Close it, okay, good. Thanks. The next item, 1/07 PM 1, we may or may not have an opportunity to do that, wait for a slow shutdown. 1R15, as we know, has the 2R15 is where they found the fuel, and they're going to be coasting down 2R16. This may be the time, Bob. I think you were interested in that, Bob Budnitz.
Yep.
So that may be the opportunity. That would be.
Furman.
2R60.
2R14 was when they removed the fuel.
So leading up to 2R15 would be where they may coast down such that we can watch the beacon validation.
Yes.
All right.
You have to wait for unit number 2, or could you do it 1R15?
What?
Instead of waiting for 2R15, could you do it at 1R15?
No, because there won't be a coast down in 1R15.
Oh, okay, you're right. Right.
We don't think. We don't. Bill, that number 13 there, 107.
Yes.
That's similar to the...
it is.
So
it
we'll
is.
Treat that the same, okay?
I would suggest that we close that for the same reasoning I gave relative to Plant Health Committee. They're sort of tied together.
They are tied together. Yeah. In fact, there'll be another one coming up later tied to that same thing.
Okay. Well, I recommend closing that.
But okay, I agree. And 15 there, close that one as well.
Fine with me.
All right. Let's see, 6/07 PM 4.
That's getting kind of archaic.
That's the same thing.
Yeah.
That's the other one. If you will close that. I think that's all of those. The next one is Nexus. We're going to follow that.
I would recommend we keep that open until they put... Actually, Nexus is not going to go in service until September of this year. And probably...
Right.
In fact, we talked about maybe having a presentation at the January public meeting.
Right.
That's what I'd recommend.
I'm not suggesting we close it. I guess it's there to continue. The next item at 7, the containment fan cooler units. Actually, I've moved this up to that SE-38 we saw earlier. That was the one, Dave, you and I talked about.
Yep.
So I'm going to close it here. That's all I'm doing.
Close it because it's merged into the other one.
That's correct.
I'm still concerned. I believe the that particular item, that there's got to be more investigation into the both the differing professional opinion and the employee concerns program. That just seems to be our really the most important open item that may come out of this incident. So I hope there'd be a follow-up on that.
Okay, I'll make a note of that.
I guess I somewhat disagree with closing item 8.
Right. Based on your comments yesterday, I would agree.
I think we should continue that, particularly based on what I said yesterday. And again, the most recent QPAR reflected 30 mispositioning events just in the first quarter of this year. So I think that's far from deserving of being closed.
All right. I'll keep that open, Bill. I think I'll move it over to conduct of operations back in the main body of the report.
Fair enough.
The next item 10 is the coaching efforts, and as I understand it, there are no coaching efforts ongoing, or formal coaching efforts. Is it correct there are no formal coaching efforts ongoing at the plant?
That's correct.
So I'd suggest we just close this.
No formal coaches. We had established coaches in individual departments. We are encouraging through our human performance improvements, coaching between members of the leadership team, for example, and peer coaching amongst our own staff. But the existence of the formal coaching positions have been eliminated.
Okay.
So I'd suggest we close that item.
That's okay with me.
The next item on the component cooling water system, we've received that information, so I guess we close that. Mm-hmm. Number 19, this is the Bob Rathy is working on this, I know, because he and I have talked about it. They're providing
we are
educational.
Working on this, yeah, we're not as far as I hoped we would be, but actually, I noticed there is a simulation in this DVD that PG&E provided us this afternoon, which may form a starting point for us. We may be able to go from there, but I haven't come up with anything
right.
I've been able to share.
Well, we'll keep you on the list.
Okay.
Page six, the top. This was an audit that QV did of Intercon, the engineer of choice.
That's been done.
And Bill and I looked at that in April.
We did, yes, in May. Yeah, correct. He'll report on it today. So F is okay to close. I agree.
Okay, okay. All right. The next item, let's see, Dr. Rossin recommended that DCPP include engaging a professional consultant to review and analyze JMC operations, etc.
Well, this seemed to just kind of evaporate. I think there was a conclusion of that fact-finding report, but I don't know of any response or any indication that anything's being done about it.
Was that a recommendation from the committee, a formal recommendation, or just a suggestion from you?
As I recall, I put it in the conclusions of the report, and the report got accepted, but that's as far as it went.
All right.
Now, whether that conclusion made it into the annual report or not, I don't know.
Well, you'll have a say-so on that, because you're helping us with the annual report.
That's right. We're talking about this annual report. Okay.
But you think it was in the fact-finding report?
It was in the fact-finding report.
We ought to check that then before we do anything
different.
I've got that on my
computer here. Let me look at it real quick.
Well, and on that score, I guess I should look to see what's in the annual report.
You want me to look real quick on the computer and find that fact-finding report?
Sure, go ahead.
You're going to need a good bit of time to do this for a minute. Should we come back to it?
We might want to come back to it.
I think we should see if we can move through the open items list and try to do this offline.
All right. Good idea. Moving on. Down to item 7, about halfway down page 6, about the mid-cycle review. Okay. That's something we have followed. Bob Budnitz and I looked at the plans for that at our May 8th fact-finding meeting, which we'll report on shortly. And one of the things we suggest is the committee follow up on the results of that assessment. Bill, I think you and I are looking at that in July, if I'm not mistaken. And I've added this item back to NS9 and I was going to close it here, if that's okay. So we're keeping the item until we finish reviewing the mid-cycle, but it'll just be moved to the NS9 in the major part of the report.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're going to follow what INPO does, for sure.
Yeah, this is the mid-cycle.
Well, the mid-cycle
their internal.
No, but what INPO does is going to cast light on this.
That's correct.
But Diablo Canyon are getting results of the mid-cycle report today.
Yes, correct. It's on our fact-finding agenda for next month.
I think it is.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. I'm on item 10 now. Following Mr. Booker's report on motion of Dr. Budnitz, that report, June 28, 07, fact-finding was accepted by the committee subject to further review and further approval.
It's been approved by email.
It did get approved by email?
Right.
Okay. So that basically can be closed. Very good. Item 11, Bill, you had were concerned about the unfavorable trend in high-pressure safety injection. Kent had just handed me a few minutes ago that information, so I would just let you look at it before we decide what to do with this item.
You're saying that's... You're in receipt of that?
Kent just gave it to me within the last 15 or half hour or so, and so I'll share that with you, and you can we can decide what to do with it.
Okay.
Item 12.
I suggest we drop item 12, but...
Yeah, I was going to say.
They have a different view.
Well, we never have heard where these eliminations, which departments were being affected. I just thought it would be of interest to the committee to know which departments are being affected.
So you want to keep that, Jim, and look at it in the fact-finding meeting?
Well, that's my suggestion, but whatever the...
Do we really mean it had some sort of a either positive or negative effect on a department? Is that what the intent of this is, Jim?
Yes. Well, that all the positions were being eliminated out of one certain
I would suggest it be closed.
All right.
I don't really know how we would determine that, even if we wanted to.
I don't know what we'd do with it if we learned it.
Yeah.
Close it. Of course, Jim, if you and Bob want to look at that in August, you could probably take a look at it. Let's see. Item 14 there at the bottom of the page and top of the next. Overall rating in the QPAR from yellow to white. Jim, can we close that?
I think so.
About 14.
So this was covered in February. Is that correct, Jim?
That's correct.
When you and Bob, okay. Yeah.
We're going to report on that now.
Okay.
Let's see. Item 15 basically dealt with the corrosion of the fire suppression system piping serving Unit 2. And so who did the March fact finding? Jim, that was you and Bob? Or you and Dave?
Let's see. Jim, you're reporting on the March fact-finding today, right?
I will be reporting.
Yeah.
All right, so we can decide whether to close that item or not then. You want to do that?
They're still taking a long time to ever move it to the green position. They're still talking about 2010 or 2011, which is a long time off.
Yes.
So I hear you saying we ought to keep this?
Keep it for now, I guess, until we hear the fact-finding report.
All right.
17, Bob.
And let's see, item 6.
We did, and it's going to be, we reviewed it just now, and it's going to be in the fact-finding we're going to talk about.
Okay.
Yeah. Item 16, the steam generator replacement video and computer, we did that yesterday, so I think we can close that.
Yes.
Item 17, Bob.
I said that was the one we did.
Right.
And we're going to hear about it imminently.
Right. Okay, we'll close that. Moving on to January 08 public meeting. That's this last past one. These are all new items. Item 1, review the action request generated by DCPP to review why DCPP was unable to identify 7 NRC identifieds.
Is that really what we did? We've had review of non-cited violations at every public meeting. Did we really miss one? What happened?
I don't remember. I'll have to go back to the minutes and see what they said, but somebody suggested we review the action.
It had to do with why there were so many NRC versus
self-identified.
Well, that's different.
I think that was it.
And an AR was written on that. And I'm sure Stan...
Yes, an AR was written at the time that was brought up.
And we can go back and look at those minutes and see who reviewed it, but...
I think...
Delete it?
Whatever.
No, I'm not pushing it. I'm just saying it was on in the minutes. And do we want to follow up on this, delete it, or what?
I don't see any point in following it up. These are non-cited. And they've all been reported, and I don't know that we've lost any of them.
Other comments?
I think I agree with Dave.
All right. Close that item. Okay, item two, concerning our recommendation of last year's report, R07-03, about a written description of the makeup water systems. PG&E reported to us that the design basis is adequately provided by the design criteria memorandum, S-16.
I think we need to cover that in a future fact-finding meeting.
It's scheduled for a fact-finding anyway, right?
All right. Future fact-finding, good. Item three.
Let's go back to number 15 up there. We actually have an open item list on the fire protection repairs and all. So I don't know why we can't close number 15 out and just carry another open item.
All right. I agree.
Okay.
Number three is moot.
Okay. Agreed.
Overcome by events.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, we'll close that.
Number four is overcome by events. We did it.
Four we've taken care of. We can close that, right? That's the oil. Five. We already carried that item in HS5, so close it here. That's stars.
Good.
These are all new stuff in the last public meeting, but they're mostly all closed.
So 6 through 10, I'm suggesting that we close all of those.
Close those.
Everybody yeah. Hitch?
Yep.
All right.
Bill, couldn't Furman close some of these without a vote if they're pretty obvious?
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of these, Furman, you know, if it's a questionable one, sure, keep it on and we'll discuss it. But so many of these you mark closed and it's obvious they're going to be closed.
I think so,
you should be able to do that without bringing it up.
If it's just a factual matter.
Yeah, but it's in your previous one list if you want.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But if it's just a factual matter, it doesn't bother us.
Right. And... when I put closing question marks, that's when I need discussion. If I don't, I usually am going to close it. So these we can close. Others on this page are scheduled for future fact-finding meetings, like the last four or five down there.
All right. Okay.
Page 9.
Well, what do we do with number 22?
Page number 22.
I would drop it because it's no longer relevant.
Yeah, coaching. Mm-hmm. Right.
It's been overtaken by PG&E events.
Correct.
Right. Good one.
You do the same with 21.
And 23, by the way.
What do you think about 23, David?
I'm not going to do anything more with it. I made my suggestion, and that's as far as I want to go.
That's what I tried to say.
I no longer have anything to say about it.
Yeah. Yes, you do. We've got another 3 days.
Let's close it.
All right, closing.
26.
All right, 24. Jim, has your December fact-finding meeting report been approved?
I haven't got it approved by email. We need to approve it today. It's on the agenda.
All right, we'll try to get that done today then. I can close that, hopefully. All right, a bunch of closes in a row. I'm down to 29. There's that DCPP identified NCVs again. That's that action request. Didn't we cancel, close that earlier?
We did, yes.
Now, was this reviewed, Jim, and...
It was not reviewed in the March.
It was not reviewed in March, no. Okay. Well, I think we should close it based on our previous action taken on this.
I agree.
Okay, item 31. I just received that from Kent as well. That was the... about the ocean swells. Measurement system they use.
Well, my suggestion there is that you've just received it, distributed to us, and we'll have some email communication about whether we think there's an issue there that we have to do more on.
Okay.
What do you think?
Fine.
And if we all agree that it's okay, then we won't do any more on it.
Fine.
All right. All right. And the last item we've got scheduled for a future fact finding. Then, last page, page 10. Suggest we close the last one and schedule the previous next to last one for a fact finding.
You got to spell Welsh one way or the other in number 33.
I do, don't know. Does Welsh have a C in it?
It's got a C.
It's got a C. Well, I got it right two times out of three.
That's it, right?
Not bad.
But thank you for that comment.
It does or does not have a C.
It does.
It does have a C.
Right. Well. If there are no other comments, that concludes our review of the fact-finding meeting, of the open items, excuse me.
That was good.
All right.
We congratulate Furman and move on.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, the next item is the nomination and election of a chairman and vice chairman for the July 1st, 08 to June 30, 09 term.
And Mr. Chairman, I would like to nominate William Conway to be the chair starting July 1st, 2008. We've got you outnumbered.
I think so.
And if you agree to serve, I would be very pleased.
Bob, do we need approval on this motion? Is that what?
Yes.
As opposed to action?
Yeah, we should have a motion.
That's the same as
that. All right, we've heard the motion. It's been seconded. Those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
We got you.
Done.
Carried.
And,
Mr. Chairman, I propose that we designate Mr. Budnitz, or Dr. Budnitz, to be vice chair during that period.
I second that motion. Jeez. Motion made and seconded. Wait. Those in favor, aye.
Can I speak to the motion?
No.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
I made the motion, and I don't want to hear from you.
Call on Bob Rathy.
Okay, this
resolution.
Well, this item is to recognize and adopt by acclamation, I would assume, a resolution of appreciation and commendation for Dr. A. David Rawson for his. I believe more than 8 years of service here to this committee as chair for a considerable period and also as vice chair. And we have prepared a copy of that resolution, which I think I'll ask, if it's appropriate, Mr. Chairman, to ask Consultant Wardell to review.
That's fine.
And I have copies if anybody... would like to have a copy, and we also have a slightly more formal presentation here. For
the audience, you have a copy.
Yes.
Oh. Do you want me to read this?
If you think it's appropriate, the chair.
That's all the words.
That's fine. Go ahead.
It'll be my pleasure.
This is great. But you don't want it read into the minutes. I'll take it home.
Yeah, but we want read into the minutes the fact that we appreciate your long-term service with the organization, the committee, rather, and wish you a long and prosperous and continued life.
Well, I thank you, and you can read that in the minutes, too.
Yeah, I just want to read the very words. Resolve that heartfelt best wishes are hereby extended by the committee and its members and consultants to Dave and Sandy Rawson for all their future endeavors.
Hear, hear.
Thanks again.
Okay, congratulations and thank you. Bob, I guess you're up again with the consulting agreement.
This matter is to approve a consulting agreement with Dr. A. David Rawson to provide for his services upon the appointment by the governor's office of another member of the committee. Once that appointment is made, then the consultant agreement would become effective and would provide for his services in connection with the review of the 18th annual report.
You have this, my signed?
We do have your signed agreement. Okay. So the motion would be to approve the agreement as drafted.
I make that motion.
Second. Motion made and seconded on the consulting agreement for Dr. Rawson. Those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So done.
Pick up time, huh?
Do committee members have anything they'd like to report with respect to public outreach, site visits, or other committee activities at the moment?
I just have one question for Bob. From the last public meeting and tour, was there any attempt to compile the findings with regard to the comments?
There were very few comments, none of any, just appreciation for the tour. There was nothing of a nature of suggestions or anything like that from the last public tour. And I haven't had a chance to really review or receive all the comments from this morning, but if there are any suggestions, we'll bring them back to the committee.
I'd just like to comment. I shuffled a handful of these. In fact, I dropped them on the floor of the bus, and as I picked them up, I looked at them, and similarly, with this new format, they're just squares to check, and that's okay.
Yeah, that's a PG&E form.
It is?
Yeah.
Okay. There were a couple of comments at the little narrow part at the bottom, whether it said comments or not. And the one that struck me, and it appeared on two of the 10 forms that I glanced at, was solar power. One saying we really should hook up to that reactor that's 93 million miles away. And the other was, again, about solar, with the kind of message that the writer still believes that with proper attention, solar power could take the place of our other energy sources. And I think this is a popular impression. You see it all the time in speeches and op-eds. Alternative energy and conservation is the answer. And in the real world, it is an answer, but a very limited part of the total answer. And if people don't understand that sooner or later we're going to have to build some power plants, I think politically we're going to have a very tough time moving ahead. It's something that anybody who sits down and talks about it with a knowledgeable individual sees through it very quickly and understands it very quickly. But it's certainly not something that member of the public has a good chance of learning from the popular press or the evening news. And I don't have any magic answer to this, but I think even our little tour today, some people came away with the impression that there was another way to do all this.
Yeah, I think I would say to anybody who's listening or wants to know my view that we ought to do as much of that as we possibly can that makes economic sense. There is huge potential, but that it cannot be the cannot stand on its own in the long haul as the way we provide electricity for our country. It's just it would not be the right total solution. But boy, we got to do as much of it as makes economic sense.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to briefly report on a March 24th visit that I had with the California Energy Commission offices. Met with Vice Chairman Boyd and Senior Nuclear Policy Advisor Byron. reviewed the DCISC annual report, discussed performance at the Diablo Canyon power plant, and responded to many questions raised by both of those individuals relative to overall issues associated with nuclear power. It was a very good meeting, and it's something that we do on an annual basis, visiting the offices of those who appointed us to our current positions. So I just want to report on that, and so people are aware of the activities that we're doing other than just public meetings.
I have a parallel report in early May with Bob Rathe accompanying me. I went to have a half-an-hour meeting with the Attorney General, Edmund Brown Jr., Jerry Brown, and the half-an-hour stretched to more than an hour and a quarter. He was very animated and interested in Diablo Canyon and in nuclear power generally, and it was a very useful exchange in which I explained what the committee does, and he was more than interested. He seemed to be very engaged in the question about Diablo's continuation and assuring that that his continuation proceeded safely, and was pleased that our committee was doing what we're doing, and I thought it was an excellent meeting.
Good. You should get a commendation too, Bob.
Well, by the way,
one like this.
It's fair to say, I don't know the history all that well, but it's fair to say that I don't think that over the history of this committee that it's been typical to have the two political officers, the appointing officials, I'm talking about the governor and the attorney general, taking the time to meet with our members in that way every year, sometimes or sometimes not. And so I thought that was, this is new to me. I was just very pleased with that.
Finally, under this agenda item, there is a collection in your rainbow package that indicates the documents that were received and provided to the committee by PG&E for our review. So we'll swiftly move on to the reports associated with fact-finding meetings, and I'd call on Firman Wardell to make his presentation at this time.
It isn't typical. We're lucky when we can get one.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm here to report on two fact-finding meetings. The first being the April 16 and 17 meeting that you and I attended at Diablo Canyon Power Plant. And I've got on the screen an outline of the agenda that we used for the meeting. As I go through these, you'll see that many of these we've covered in yesterday's meeting, so I won't duplicate that. In fact, the first one is a good example of that, the steam generator replacement project.
Is my mic on?
My mic is on, yes.
Wouldn't know it.
Am I? Is my mic on? Okay, they're nodding yes. The first one, again, we covered that yesterday, and no need to cover that again unless someone has a question or comment. The second item is very closely related to an item we had yesterday. It involves an audit of the maintenance department, and the audit done by the Quality Verification Department, or QV, concluded that, quote, maintenance activities and implementing procedures were being effectively implemented and that overall performance was satisfactory, unquote. There were no findings, but there were some areas considered unsatisfactory or some weaknesses. Industrial safety was considered unsatisfactory. The corrective action program was not particularly effective in maintenance. The foreign material exclusion, or FME, work practices didn't focus on prevention, and a couple other things. In responding to this audit, Mr. Kerry Harbor, who is the director of maintenance, told us yesterday his action plan, not specifically for these items, but just in general, included these items. So without going through all those, unless you want me to, what he told us yesterday as far as his plans for maintenance covers the action plan for the response to the audit is included in what he told us. And primarily, that's to me boils down to his enforcing standards and management expectations of employees to meet certain standards. The fact-finding team thought the audit was thorough and thought the actions were appropriate as far as addressing any finding, any open items. Next, item three, refueling, 2R14 refueling outage results. Again, we heard that yesterday, and I will not repeat that. Item four, plant chemistry performance. Similarly, we heard that yesterday, and I will not repeat that either. Now, the reason we're getting all these repeats like this is because before we hear items at public meetings, you like to look at them in a fact-finding meeting ahead of time. That's what we've done here. It's just they reported yesterday, and I'm reporting today. The fifth item, containment fan cooler unit modifications, is an item that the committee has been following for some time. And I'd like to comment on our review of that item at this April fact-finding meeting, and I'm going to jump ahead to my next fact-finding meeting in May and include that item here just so we'll have the full picture at one time. The containment fan coolers back in the early 90s were found to have a reverse rotation problem. It was addressed back then with a certain amount of reverse rotation being found acceptable. The issue lay dormant for quite a while. And that resolution, however, required fairly extensive maintenance to be done during outages to maintain the dampers for those fans so that the dampers would remain closed and the fans would not experience reverse rotation. The problem was if the fans experienced too much reverse rotation when they're called on to be used to perform their safety function, they would more than likely experience an overcurrent trip or something to that effect and would be not usable. The resolution of that, such that it would not be a safety issue, was the dependence on the dampers and the damper maintenance to prevent any significant reverse rotation. The committee found this acceptable at the time and still finds that acceptable as a resolution to the safety issue.
Let me ask you just one question on that. The rotation of these fans is important in the event of an accident or even a design basis accident, right?
Correct.
Now, in such an accident, would one be able to close these dampers or open these dampers or adjust these dampers?
Well, in an accident, you're not worried about the dampers. It's during normal operation. You want the dampers to be closed. Back up a minute. The fans are used both in normal operation and in an accident situation.
Yeah.
And the dampers need to be closed, or the dampers need to be such that you don't get any more, you don't want any reverse rotation if you can help it. But the station can tolerate a certain amount of reverse rotation during normal operation, such that when these fans are called on in an accident, that they have enough starting, don't have draw too much starting current because they got to reverse up to zero and then have positive rotation. And give me your question again.
Well, if this were ever to happen, then the idea would be that the dampers would be available if necessary, right, to allow the rotation to reverse and take place, to stop and then rotate in the right way.
Basically, you want the dampers closed during normal operation, such that air does not flow back through the dampers and cause reverse rotation of the fans. During an accident, the fans are started, and therefore the dampers will do whatever they're supposed to do. I've forgotten whether it's open or closed, but the performance of the dampers is not that important in a post-accident situation. You're depending on the fans to do their job. The dampers are there to prevent anti-rotation or reverse rotation prior to their being needed for the accident condition.
Okay. So nobody has to do anything with the dampers?
No. No, the dampers, they go to whatever position they're designed to during the post-accident situation. There's no, as far as I know, there's no control over those dampers, anything that has to be done.
Let me clarify. We've got five containment fan coolers, but not all five of them. And as Furman indicated, they operate. They have a normal cooling function as well as a post-accident function. And we typically have three of them operating during normal operation. And what these backdraft dampers do, but they all feed the same exhaust header. And so what these backdraft dampers do is to prevent the pressurization of that header from back feeding through the ones that are not operating, such that they reverse rotate. For the concern that Furman correctly characterized. So during normal operation, the fans that are not operating, the backdraft dampers prevent the reverse rotation. But when an accident occurs, they're all given a start signal to start. So the expectation is that the fans would start and the backdraft dampers don't perform a function during the accident.
Right. And a small amount of back rotation is not considered serious because they would still be able to start the right way and overcome that.
That's correct.
As called upon.
That is
and
correct.
A large amount of reverse rotation would prevent that. So there's a threshold, and that's been determined, and the amount of back rotation now is below that, and so it's acceptable.
That's correct.
Did I say that's
right? We have analyzed for reverse rotation to demonstrate that with the acceptance criteria that we do in our testing, that the fans do not reverse rotate in excess of that acceptance criteria.
Right. And it's been
analyzed.
And it's also my impression, correct me if I'm wrong, that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has reviewed that and accepted that resolution. Is that your memory, Furman?
That's my recollection, yes.
Yeah, my recollection is that, too. But perhaps you don't really...
I don't know if they've reviewed the specific analysis. The subject, as Furman indicated, came up in the early 90s in conjunction with a violation or three violations in the early 90s. And we reviewed, or in response to that, we did address the fact that some reverse rotation is acceptable. The extent to which they review that analysis, I'm not aware of.
Hey, I didn't mean to put you on the spot. Furman and I both have the impression, I suppose we'll have to track it down one more time to be sure, that after the 05, within the last 3 years, that they've done that review. I think you share that impression.
Well, I think my recollection is, I don't know whether the NRC looked at your particular analysis or not, but my recollection says that they approved the fact that you had an analysis to make acceptable or tolerable a certain amount of anti-rotation.
Thank you.
That is correct. We have explained that to the NRC in detail.
Thank you.
Furman, before you leave this topic, but after you've finished any more technical discussion, I want to get back to the employee and the rest of this situation.
All right, I'll be getting to that in just a minute. Okay. One additional thing, technically speaking, is since the backdraft dampers require such extensive maintenance during the outage to assure their operability, DCPP had come up with a modification to the shaft of the fans to prevent anti-rotation without having to worry about the dampers and do all the maintenance on that. And they tried a few different things. It didn't work as well as they'd wanted. I think now finally they've come up with a design. It's an anti-rotation pawl, P-A-W-L, that is, I guess, a ratchet type thing, and it prevents reverse rotation of the shaft.
Right.
This had been scheduled, I think, for 2008 or 2009, but has been delayed for primarily budget reasons, but also the fact that the design wasn't ready to be put in yet, hadn't been proven out, and hadn't been certified. So I think they're just about to the point now where they have a successful design, and they plan to put one in, I believe, in the next outage for each unit, or even before that, on a test basis, just for one fan, to test the device, see how it works, be sure they've got all items covered. But that doesn't affect the fact that the anti-rotation situation or issue is solved as far as a safety problem goes. Once they get the pawls in place, then they can not have to do all the extended maintenance during the outage to assure the dampers perform correctly. So in the long run, it's a better solution. In the short run, they're dealing with it and may have those pawls in as early, one of them as early as next year. As I got talking to to Pat Nugent yesterday, a PG&E employee working on this issue. So that really is where we ended the April fact-finding meeting. After April, Bob Budnitz and I looked at the same issue in May, based on the fact that NRC had received an allegation and we had received an email on May 15th from a member of the public on this issue. This email stated what Ms. Zamek started this meeting out with, the concern she read to us. That was one of the concerns that she read to us. So Bob and I thought we'd look at this again to be sure that we understood the issue and that things were still satisfactory. And I guess the bottom line is, yes, we were still confident or certain that the issue had been resolved as a safety issue, that anti-rotation could be tolerated to a certain limit, and that the back draft dampers would be effective in doing their job. Now, on April 1st, during startup or just before startup, a couple or three backdraft dampers were slightly open, causing some anti-rotation at about 50 RPM, I believe it was. And that was visually observed by an operator in containment. That was within the 150 RPM or 400, depending on the situation, RPM acceptance level. To close the dampers, the operator started some fans from the control room. That flow closed the dampers and kept them closed. Now, that anti-rotation was within the tolerance for anti-rotation to assure the safety of the fans.
Right.
Two, the situation in which the anti-rotation took place and the dampers being there was not a normal operating situation in which Mr. Nugent told me yesterday that backdraft dampers more than likely would not have been opened. So it was an unusual, sort of one-of-a-kind situation, not a normal operating situation. So, and I'm going to conclude here, and Dave will pick up your concern. And our conclusion from the fact-finding meeting, Bob's and my conclusion as we put in our report, which you've seen, is that DCPP had satisfactorily resolved the containment fan cooler reverse rotation safety issue in outages 1R13 in November of 05 and outage 2R13 in May of 06 with the backdraft damper mods, and the enhanced maintenance. That's our basic conclusion. We also suggest the committee continue to follow this modification of anti-rotation pause to its conclusion. So that's our bottom line on the issue. Now, Dave, you might want to push on.
I was struck by the comment at the beginning of our session this afternoon in which she raised another item, a different item, and explained that a differing professional opinion had been filed or attempted, and the person who filed it wasn't satisfied.
On a different issue. On a different issue than this.
On a different issue. One of our immediate reactions to all this was, this is a textbook case for a differing professional opinion to be heard and discussed and resolved. And if it was resolved to the satisfaction of our fact-finding team, namely you and Dr. Budnitz, chances are that a reasonable engineer would also agree with that finding. But there's no evidence that any effort was made in the fan cooler case to make use of the differing professional opinion option. Just checking with Stan and Pete, is that right?
That's correct.
The letter writer is now aware that differing professional opinion might be part of this issue, including it in another instance in her letter, or based on another instance, and the thing gets curiouser and curiouser. What I would hope the committee can find out is why, if the issue was of concern to the engineer, there was no attempt to use the differing professional opinion process. And if that was not satisfactory, why an employee concerns issue was not filed, and try to resolve the problem that way. And I think these are things that I hope we can get to the bottom of someday.
I would agree.
And maybe somebody will send me a note when you do. But Stan, if you can add any insights to this, I would appreciate it.
Well, in terms of the differing professional opinion, I know of no differing professional opinion on the subject of the containment fan coolers. I don't have anything else to add. I would like to maybe perhaps correct the record. I think I understood you to say, Furman, that about the anti-rotation poles being installed in 2009. I believe that it's 2010 is the current expectation, but we are evaluating that schedule.
Right, and that was just installing one on one fan to test it out.
That's correct.
Yeah.
When we install the one, obviously, when we're using a device like this, we would not want to install it on all the fan coolers at the same time. We want to put it in and ensure that it's going to accomplish its intended function.
Is the manufacturer going to do any tests of this? Are you depending on any other tests before installing it?
Yeah, tests have been performed.
They have been. Let me ask Sam one more question. With regard to this, her first issue in which she mentioned differing professional opinion, are you aware of this, and can you add any information for us on that?
Yeah.
I can't add any.
I'm sorry. I can't add any information on that.
Are you aware of it?
I'm aware of it. I'm aware of it.
I have a question for either Stan or Furman. I think, Furman, you said that whenever they started the plant startup, that you did have some reverse rotation on a few of the fans, but the RPM was below the acceptable value on that.
That's correct.
Did the operators then, though, take action to close those dampers to be sure it would not go beyond that? And do they know what RPM it would have gone to if they had not taken action?
I can answer one of those two questions. They took action. They turned another fan on to cause the dampers to go shut.
But during an accident situation, would they have been able to do that?
Well, it doesn't matter. Like I said, this was a unique situation.
Well, I realize that. Right.
That would not appear during operation or necessarily prior to an accident. It was during the shutdown and startup condition. It was described to me as a unique situation that they wouldn't experience in normal operation. Stan might be able to have more clarification.
Just to be sure, we do surveillance testing before we go back, place the plant back in service, and we test under what conditions those fans would be exposed to verify that there is no reverse rotation in excess of the allowable limit. That's explicitly tested.
Thank you.
All right, well, that's all I had on that item, unless someone has questions or comments. Basically, we're going to continue to follow this. Bob.
Yeah, I have a I have a question. That is, in the public comment that we heard at the beginning of the afternoon session, there was a allegation, reading from a letter that was sent to the NRC in April. There was an allegation that this general situation provides a chilling environment in which workers are find themselves psychologically or otherwise discouraged from filing DPOs. And I'm wondering what the committee or our consultants, what we together think we might or could do, if anything, to understand better the validity of that allegation. I don't really have any idea how I myself could assess a chilling environment allegation unless I could myself or one of us talk to the people making that and understand what their what the evidence is.
Right.
I'm an engineer and I'm interested in evidence.
Bob, you recall, is that you and I visited with the supervisor of employee concerns department in February, and I'm going to make a report on, you know, what his concerns were and what his opinion of this. So I can do that at that time. But that's, and we normally have a fact finding at least once a year to talk to the employee concerns program. But all we can report is what the supervisor told us.
Ah, I understand that. I was there.
Yeah.
I'm reacting to something else. So today, only just an hour and a half ago or so, an allegation was made in my and Dave's and Bill's presence, in the committee's presence, that there's a chilling effect, and was, in plain English, asking us to do our duty to get to the bottom of it. And I'm wondering if others have a suggestion about how we might go about doing that.
Let me say first, we responded to the email with similar allegations, to which I think Chairman Conway signed our email going back, saying we would be discussing this item at this meeting today, and that we invited them to a fact-finding meeting to discuss their concerns with us. And I think you mentioned our July fact-finding, Bill, but we've not heard back.
Yeah, I of course understand that. I was part of making sure that response was sensible, and it is sensible. I'm going beyond that. I'm picking up where Rosalind left off and asking the question about whether there's some suggestion from any of my colleagues about how we might do something else other than what we've already done on this allegation that there's a chilling environment.
Stan, the Diablo Canyon performs an employee survey periodically, and is it that one of the questions that they ask them to answer anonymously is how they feel about this program?
Now, can you repeat your question?
You perform an employee survey periodically about how they feel about the plant and things. Is that one of the questions that you try to determine as part of that survey, employee survey, as to how people feel about the program?
That's correct. We conduct, you can help me out here too, Pete, but we conduct surveys and regularly ask that question.
And just for some background information for you, directly related to the allegation that was read to you today, the NRC did refer those allegations, the specific letter, to PG&E to do an investigation. And my understanding is that the NRC is also doing their own investigation into the retaliation allegation and potential chilling effect. And I don't believe either of those is complete yet, but should be in the near term. So those, there are, we are delving into those allegations at this time.
And I have a question. I was under the impression that neither this committee nor PG&E knew who the person was that raised these questions or filed this. This is another new differing opinion, but which I didn't know about, so I'm not talking about that one. I'm going back to the old fan coolers one. That you really do not know who the individual is who's raising this question. Is that still the case?
Are you speaking specifically about the
fan coolers?
The fan coolers?
I'm going to take these one at a time.
That person has not been identified to us.
And how about the differing professional opinion? The one that was mentioned this afternoon.
Stan,
yes, that's a process that exists out at the plant that is not secret. I mean,
so the person who made the filed the differing professional opinion is known. You can speak to him, vice versa. What?
Yes.
Right. Further discussion.
I would just respond quickly to my colleague's question about what more. How can the committee deal with something like this? My experience has been it takes a person with special techniques to be able to reach a conclusion that a chilling effect actually exists. an individual can tell you, such as has been identified in this letter, that there is a chilling effect, it's awfully difficult unless you have the knowledge and ability to pursue that to the extent that you can absolutely define it does exist. And I don't know there's anybody on this committee who has that talent or capability to be able to do that.
Or would have the time to look into it as a part of our activities. And that takes a substantial amount of involvement and patience, I think. And on our schedules, I can't see how we could do that. And we're not consultants to be hired to do that.
It's a lengthy process to try to reach some sort of a conclusion that has any validity associated with it. So I tend to agree with what you're saying, that it's a time-consuming but talent-laden ability to be able to do something like that. And the average person, like ourselves, I think does not have that ability to be able to reach a conclusion that has some substantiation associated with it.
Well, I agree with both of those, but it's troubling. Let me describe, and I think what I'm about to say everybody will probably agree with. There is clearly one individual that believes this. What I can't tell is whether there's 1,000. I don't believe there's 1,000. Or 100, or 10, or 2. Because a chilling effect on one individual is impossible to get to the bottom of, and in any event, impossible to remedy. But if it's endemic or spreading or widespread, that's a different point. And it was just that distinction that I was trying to see whether there's some way that we can get to the bottom of. And I accept fully the demurral of the chairman sitting, you know, 1 meter to my right, that he claims he doesn't have the expertise, and I can tell you I don't. You know, I know what I can't do, and that's something I can't do. That's just not something I'm trained in or skilled in. So I was just exploring this for a minute, and I accept the conclusion that it's not something that it's just not an area that we're constituted to do. We're as important as it might be.
I would suggest the committee take a look at both the NRC review of this item and the PG&E review that Mr. Kettleson just mentioned. See what we think about those investigations and decide at that point what we think we should do, if anything.
I think that's an excellent suggestion, and I think we're probably all going to adopt it.
From my experience, if the NRC feels like there's a chilling effect, then they'll ask the utility to look into that and investigate it. They'll normally ask them to bring in an outside consultant who will do interviews and do surveys, just like I talked about, an employee survey, to determine whether that's legitimate or not.
And that is, in fact, how the investigation is being conducted.
All right. Okay. I was going to move to the next item on the agenda, but I want to be sure we're finished with this one. Right. Item 6, the extensive damage mitigation guidelines, or EDMGs, was the next item of our review, and we reviewed this with Mr. Bob Zinkowski, manager of DCPP Security. These were based on NRC's February 2005 security order B.5.B, which dealt with beyond design basis fires or explosions. No matter how they happened, they were just large events that would take out large portions of the plant and how one might recover from something like that. In B5B, there was a requirement there that nuclear plant operators come up with procedures, equipment, and what have you, and training, such that they could handle these beyond design basis events. PG&E had completed that work, and we looked at the training. But most importantly, we looked at the guidelines and procedures which they plan to use for one of these events. There are 15 of them. We looked at the guide. The guidance, and there's a mitigation guideline. Those are the two umbrella documents. Reviewed two specific procedures, and we felt that they were comprehensive and useful for the intended purpose of damage control and mitigation of beyond design basis events. We learned that NRC is performing an inspection of the EDMGs in June this month. It may have been completed by now. and that we would should follow up on the NRC inspection to see what they came up with. Plus, we were interested in looking at some of the unique equipment that was set aside for EDMG purposes and how they might be hooked up. This is temporary and portable equipment that might need to be hooked up. And further, we might be interested in a drill, an EDMG drill, that might take place in the future. And our plan is to stay in touch with Mr. Ziemkowski and Mr. Oliver to see when we might do those things. But basically, we found what they've done so far to be satisfactory. Questions? Right. Item 7 is the QV, or Quality Verification Audit of Intercon, which is the mostly on-site design engineering outfit that PG&E uses to support their engineering work. There was a 2007 audit here, which we looked at the time. The audit had come up with several areas of concern, basically Intercon's resources to perform quality work, the amount of work. They observed a lack of vigor in Intercon's independent design review process, and a possible weakness in Intercon's involvement of the design reviews during the management approval process of modifications. Those three things. During this meeting, the actions had been completed, and one, Intercon has increased their resources, particularly in the civil engineering and instrument and electrical areas. The rigor of the quality reviews has been improved, with their Intercon supervisors taking more of a direct role in the process. And three, and finally, they have required Intercon personnel who do these designs to be involved in and participate in all of the pre-design, during design, and post-design review meetings. So that seemed to us satisfactory, and PG&E was happy with that as well. So I guess the bottom line is the fact-finding team thought that the actions were acceptable. Next, Rosemont Transmitters, item number 8. In this case, Rosemont transmitters, by the way, are transmitters used throughout DCPP and many other nuclear plants to measure process parameters like temperature, flow, pressure, etc. In this case, Rosemont, the manufacturer, had filed a 10 CFR Part 21 report, which meant that there was a problem or an issue with, industry-wide, perhaps, with the transmitters. In this particular case, it was insufficient thread engagement for certain pressure transmitters. So we wanted to review this, and NRC sent this to all utilities, asking them to see if it affected them, and if it did, what they would do. And this is called the Operating Experience Assessment Program, OEA. So we looked at that with the instrument engineer. It did go through the DCPP OEA program. They did review it. It looked like a thorough review. They reviewed all the transmitters of this type at Diablo Canyon, both installed and in the warehouse, and found that they were properly threaded, engaged, and that the procedures here to install them was properly written to assure the proper thread engagement. So we felt that was satisfactory. We also inquired about other Rosemont transmitters, and there were 5 other Part 21 notifications during 2007. 3 of those were not applicable to Diablo Canyon. The remaining 2 were documented and evaluated using the OEA program. So bottom line here is the Diablo Canyon had satisfactorily reviewed and evaluated the Rosemont transmitter situation. No action was required. Number 9, the ISFAC status, the Independent Spent Fuel Storage Installation. That was presented yesterday by Mr. Gerald Strickland, and I will not repeat that here. Item 10, DCPP management action on key plant issues. This is the item that Mr. Conway and I discussed during the open items review about how DCPP management gets involved, high-level management gets involved with the key plant issues. What do they do with them? How do they address them, disposition them? And we were basically directed to the Plant Health Committee, which their management is involved in and attended, which maintains the key issues list. They review that list. They check the status of the list. They review action plans for that list. And that's pretty much what they told us that was done. I think our expectations were perhaps more involvement by the top management of the station. That's what Bill Mr. Conway mentioned earlier today that he would take to address in a, at a future meeting at the plant. So I guess we were almost satisfied that they were doing what we thought they should be doing, but Bill will follow up personally to see what the situation is. Bill, any comments on that from you? Okay. And then finally, item 11, Bill Conway met with John Conway, Senior VP, and the Chief Nuclear Officer to talk about items in the fact-finding report and some other items of interest. That concludes this fact-finding report. And if there are no substantive issues, I would ask for approval and ask also for any minor comments to be provided to me to finalize the report.
Okay.
Second.
Motion made and seconded. Approval of the fact-finding report. Those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. We're going to take a 5-minute break now. Chairman Waddell is now going to make another fact-finding report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This report will be for the May 20 through 22nd fact-finding meeting by Bob Budnitz and myself. 20, 21, and 22. Thank you for the correction. On the first day, we met at PG&E's geosciences office, offices in San Francisco to discuss the first four items on the agenda, the first being an update of the December 22, 2003 San Simeon earthquake, which the committee had reviewed several times. We revisited this because we knew some extensive work had been done by geosciences. We wanted to see that nothing important had been overlooked that might affect Diablo Canyon. And the Geosciences Department better understands now the dynamics of that earthquake and some of the minor aftershocks. Bottom line is, based on an update, there's nothing new that would cast any doubt on the Diablo Canyon plant design. Second item is we looked at tsunamis. And originally, the committee had looked at the December 2004 Sumatra tsunami, which affected many parts of the world. This was looked at by us, by geosciences, and by the committee, and found that the existing design basis for Diablo Canyon tsunamis was satisfactory, even for that earthquake superimposed on Alaska and with the waves coming this direction. Recently, however, even though that's satisfactory, and those were caused by earthquakes, concerns of large offshore landslides causing tsunamis has been receiving attention, and NRC has recently begun a broad study of this. Geosciences, PG&E Geosciences Department, is considering performing a probabilistic tsunami hazard analysis, PTHA, and this would be a first-of-a-kind type of analysis for the industry. And it would involve looking at undersea land formations, possible landslides nearby, and developing a probabilistic description of initiating events, responses to seabed landslides, and the resulting wave action. So they're looking at doing this analysis. I don't know whether they are or not, but we would strongly encourage that they do and follow up on the results. The third item was lessons learned from the Japanese KKNPS. I'm not going to try to pronounce the actual, that's the nuclear plant in Japan, earthquake of July 2007. I've got the name in my report, the full name. Committee looked at this. Dr. Clough of the Geosciences Department made a presentation to us in this very room, I believe. And basically, the bottom line for that plant, those plants, multi-unit plant, I think there were 8 or 9 plants there at that site, was that the safety portions of the plant survived quite nicely, some of the non-safety portions of the plant did not survive nicely because they weren't designed to. So this particular topic of the non-safety items being affected by the earthquake is under review for how, what do they want to do about reviewing that and its impact on Diablo Canyon's operability, not from a safety standpoint, but just a equipment damage and operability standpoint. So when they complete that study, they'll assess any recommendations to Diablo Canyon for changes to the non-safety-related portions of the plant. Fact-finding team would recommend that the committee take a look at that when it's done. Finally, item four, an update on the long-term seismic program was in order. This is a program started back in the early 80s, late 80s and early 90s. And it's sort of a one-of-a-kind in the industry in that PG&E committed to the NRC to take on the long-term seismic program because this is a seismically active part of the world. So anytime there's a new earthquake in this area or in the world, the geosciences team is studying it and adding to their long-term seismic program. Now, there's enough has been going on since the last time they updated it. They are going to do a five-year update effort on the long-term seismic program. This is under their own initiative. NRC is certainly interested, but it's not a requirement. So our recommendation is we think it's a good idea. We'd recommend the committee follow up on that at that time. Item five, the boric acid control, corrosion control program, BACC. We've looked at this program before. It was time to check in for an update. Basically, the program monitors leaks from systems containing boric acid. The leaks can cause corrosion of carbon steel components, which is undesirable, obviously. Diablo Canyon has an effective program covered by a procedure in which each leak is identified, put into the corrective action program with an action request, and then followed up to be sure the leak is corrected. INPO, in their last evaluation, provided the plant two areas for improvement for the BACC program. And one was that they were not using the corrective action program effectively on corrosion control issues, and that there was insufficient personnel sensitivity to boric acid products found on various valves and other components. So the station took some actions. They tightened the definition of leakage to better identify the leaks. They lowered the reporting threshold for employees. In other words, they report smaller and less significant corrosion activity. They began, probably one of the more important things they did was began a new valve packing program to better pack valves with better materials and better techniques. And that was based on, I believe, a benchmarking, a trip they had taken. It's quite effective in the industry as far as reducing valve leakage. They'd already seen results, improved results. Leak identification reporting has increased. The backlog of identified leaks has been reduced. They're putting more attention on it, getting more maintenance involvement on it. So basically, we had found before that the boric acid corrosion control program had been satisfactory. These steps will make it even better, so we'll follow it again perhaps in a year and a half to 2 years to see how these changes have taken effect. Good program, making it better. Dr. Russell.
I didn't hear the beginning of what you said. Was there any evidence of any corrosion or cracking where the boric acid had leaked? Any components that might have been affected by it?
There are a number of leaks discovered because of boric acid crystals around seals or valve packing, but there's been no corrosion, no substantial corrosion noted. Most of them are pretty small leaks.
They reported what they characterize as ring around the collar observations that didn't seem like there was anything that was functionally important from that, except as a sign rather than as a functionally important thing by themselves, and there were a bunch of those.
I agree with that. Item six, corrective action program we heard about yesterday. I will not go over that again. Item seven, in a lot of our fact-finding meetings, the fact-finding team likes to look at a system or a program This time we looked at the heating, ventilating, and air conditioning system, HVAC systems, talked to the system engineers, and looked at the system health. And there are 14 subsystems, I guess, here. 10 were evaluated as green or the best health. The other four were evaluated as white, which is satisfactory health. And the system engineers had plans to bring everything to a green status. No systems were rated yellow or red, which are unsatisfactory. Fact-finding team reviewed a system engineer walkdown. They have a checklist of items they walked down during usually quarterly walkdowns. We looked at that, a completed one that looked pretty good. So basically, we had no concerns. The systems are in satisfactory health. System engineers appeared knowledgeable. They've got a good action plan to bring things to green status. Item 8, the steam generator replacement project, was discussed at length yesterday. I will not go over that. Same for item 9, the Unit 2 fuel failure. What? Item 10, exactly. Thank you, Bob. I will not do that unless somebody has questions. I've already covered that, actually. So then that brings us to item 11, radiation dose projections during plant emergencies. The fact-finding team talked to Mark Somerville, radiation protection manager, to talk about the process they use to events to project what radiation might escape the plant, what direction it might go in, what concentrations it might be in. And the primary tool used is EARS, E-A-R-S, Emergency Assessment and Response System, coupled with a meteorological information and dose assessment system known as MIDAS, M-I-D-A-S. So we looked into those applications. They're used industry-wide, well-proven. I'm not going to go into great detail of this. It's in the report about what these systems can do, but they're using the same systems, these two, that the industry uses, and they've been proven to be reasonably accurate. We did hear yesterday morning from a member of the public about the use of the MIDAS system, whether Diablo Canyon was using that system in the best way or not. Can't tell from what we looked at whether they were or not. I'd suggest that we look into this in a future fact-finding meeting.
With regard to MIDAS, it would seem to me that something very important would be whether or not Gallo Canyon has benchmarked other plants and what they're doing with this now, particularly right. Others with unusual terrain, oceanside or mountainous. I mean, on what other basis could we really, or could they really make a decision about whether they need to upgrade?
Well, they're experts in this area. And I guess we'd want to know what they think about.
Well, they think they need to upgrade, no question about that. But, I mean, if they want to make their case, I think it would help to benchmark and put into their to their case what others are doing.
I don't know if they benchmarked or not, but it would seem reasonable that they would benchmark others. We'll check on that when we look at it in the fact-finding meeting. Item 12, the outage 2R14 containment integrated leak rate test. That was mentioned yesterday in the outage update. I don't know that I should go over it again. The test was successful. It was well run, and we were pretty impressed with the test engineer and the report that they'd done. Excuse me while I change my slide. Item 13 is the mid-cycle INPO type self-assessment and status of INPO initiatives. INPO comes roughly every 2 years, perform an evaluation. In the middle of that cycle, most utilities, nuclear plants, will do a mid-cycle self-assessment. At this particular fact-finding meeting, we looked at the action plans for the team, talked to the team manager, Jackie Hines, and that's about all that was done at the time we were there. The actual site assessment will be June 16 through 26. So that finished up, today's the 26th, finishing up today. And then the report they expect will be reviewed and finalized by July 9. Bill, I think you and I have this on our July fact-finding meeting to look at, and we'll do that. The other part of this was were the AFIs, or areas for improvement, from the last evaluation, and there were 14 or 15 of those. There's actions going on in all of them. Some are resolved, some are not resolved, but they expect to be resolved by the time the info gets here. But these are just things the self-assessment will look at in detail to see where they are on these, and that's better to follow up in our fact-finding, Bill, than me to go down the list and try to report on it now. Item 14 is what I'll call an emergent issue on our agenda. It wasn't originally on there, but while we were there, the main meteorological tower was damaged by a crane, mobile crane, hitting one of the guy wires that holds the tower. Tower sustained some damage. They thought there might be a risk of the tower falling, so they cleared the area of cars and people while we were there, pulled a crane in to stabilize it, and they've since taken that tower down and are taking actions to replace it. They'll have the replacement complete, I think, by the end of August. We thought that was satisfactory, what they were doing. Finally, item 15, Dr. Budnitz met with Ken Peters, Senior Director of Engineering, to talk about our fact-finding meeting. That concludes the report, which I'd sent to everyone, and if there are significant comments, we can talk about them now. If not, I would request approval, and I would also request small comments be sent to me to update.
Further comments? Motion to approve?
So moved.
Motion made, seconded. All in favor, aye. Opposed. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Any other questions?
Jim Booker with an additional fact-finding report.
I'm going to report on the two fact-finding meetings. The first one will be the February the 27th and 28th that Dr. Budnick and I attended here at the site. Before we could gain access to the radiological patrol areas, we had to go through the computer visitor radiological access training. All I had to do was take the requal because I had taken the test earlier. Dr. Budnick had to take the full test, and we completed those and was granted access to the radiological control areas. The first full-day tour was predominantly taken up by looking at 2R14 and the steam generator move, and I don't really think there's any need, since we had all that information yesterday, to go into that. The only comment I would have is observations of the contractor moving that huge steam generator, the old steam generator, through very small areas, minimum clearance. He did an excellent job, so you could tell they had an awful lot of experience doing that. The next item on our agenda was an update of the fire protection PRA, the fire protection probabilistic risk assessment, and I think Bob would like to report on that.
And this just briefly, they're doing a new fire PRA. And they're using the new ANS standard, which is just published for it. And this was an update because they were only partway through as we were there, with the notion that they would have completed by the end of the calendar year. But in parallel, they're also doing complex, and it is a complex analysis, to bring themselves in compliance with a new consensus code called NFPA 805, National Fire Protection Association Code 805, which the NRC has adopted as an alternate means of meeting the fire protection regulations in a performance-based way to supplement the older fire regulations that have been in existence for the longest time. And when they're done with their analysis, they hope and expect that they will be in compliance with NFPA 805 and use it instead, although that decision still awaits the analysis that they're doing. And so we reviewed what they were doing. I'm actually pretty familiar with that analysis methodology, having exercised it myself. And the report was there. It looked like they understood what they were doing. The team was very competent. In fact, they're considered so competent They're considered one of the two or three leading teams in the whole industry in doing this particular kind of work. They had just been visited by a team of peer reviewers who were going around doing peer reviews, and they were chosen as the first peer review group to do because they were considered exemplary by their colleagues in the industry. So that was a good sign that they have a wonderful reputation outside, and it certainly looked like it. And the work is going to be done at the end of the calendar year, and we're going to review it again. Okay? Now, the benefit, and this is really important, the benefit is that by using performance-based approaches rather than prescriptive regulations in fire protection, it is believed by everybody in the industry that they'll be able to achieve better fire protection effectiveness with less resources, and it's a win-win for everybody. Because it's now understood widely in the industry that some of the regulations that were put in place years ago, although they were made sense at the time, in light of our current knowledge, revisions are necessary, and this is going to enable them to bring it about.
The next item on our... any questions? The next item we covered was to review the QPAR, which is the Quality Performance Assessment Report for the last quarter of 2007 with the QV, Quality Verification Director. One of the changes that they have made in their QPAR is that in many past years, QV normally spent 100% of their time on overviewing regulatory requirements. Well, they've made a change. About 50% of their time now is an oversight of the regulatory requirements, and the other 50% is an overview of how the plant is going to excellence. So above and beyond the regulations, above and beyond the standards. And that's pretty much what they're doing. This particular QPAR identified five areas of improvement that needs improvement. One is supplemental personnel oversight. Supplemental means the contractors that they've been in. And this is a problem they had with their last refueling outage. Industrial safety performance is not up to what they expect it to be, not up to their standards and goals, and that needs to be worked on. A decline in maintenance scope stability, that is, the work management effectiveness is not as well as doing as well as they should. And the timeliness of completing plant procedure upgrades is behind time. Also, operations license class throughput. This is where they had so many operators fail last year in their NRC license. We heard today while we were doing our plant tour that they just finished up their licensed operator class and they had 100% pass on this class. So I guess the corrective action they've taken has been effective. And the last one was maintenance standards, that the maintenance service department is really not meeting the minimum standards they should have. That needs to be done. Another area that they identified that Mr. Conway was talking about yesterday is configuration control is challenging mispositions in the chemistry department. And I think we heard enough about that yesterday. The next item was a discussion with the supervisor of the Employee Concerns Program on the employee concerns and the different professional opinion. He stated that they did not receive any employee concerns in the year 2007. And we inquired of him and asked him, you know, what in the past they've received these employee concerns. They did not any last year. And we asked him why does he think they did not receive any employee concerns last year, 2007. His response was that he has a feeling that the employees feel comfortable and confident of going to their supervisors to resolve their issues and don't feel like they have to issue an employee concern. He also stated that they got like 68 already this year, what they call contacts. That is, an employee has an issue. He doesn't want to make a quality concern of it, but he wants to talk to the Employee Concerns Program or someone about that. It's a large number, but this was during a big outage also, and so it's not too unusual to receive these. The way they resolve those, they either talk to the employee about the concern, not the concern, about their issue, or talk to the supervisors and normally can resolve all of those. In 2007, they did receive one different professional opinion concern, and that was satisfactorily resolved with the employee and his supervisor, and the employee signed off on it in 2007. They normally receive about one of the different professional opinions about every 2 years. The next item we reviewed is the seismic issues with the spent fuel building. I think we heard some of that yesterday from Gerald. But essentially, whenever they were doing the review of the spent fuel structure, for the spent fuel, when they were going to move the spent fuel cast inside the spent fuel to transfer it outside, they found that they had some problems with the bolting up in the upper areas of the building. And this was not a concern during normal seismic events, but only when they were lifting the cast. And that's they've got the design complete. And I think Gerald reported yesterday they would have the bolting changed out here in the next few months. The next issue was to check into the status of the PG&E response to the public concern about the shipwreck. And we covered that yesterday, so in great detail. I think they did a good job in their analysis, so we don't need to cover that again. Yes, son.
Before you ask for a vote, I want to make sure that... No, I don't want to make sure. I'm wondering how the impression you got from the Employee Concerns Program jives with the chilling effect that Budnitz mentioned a few minutes ago that was in the letter that the young lady read at the beginning of our session today. How do you reconcile these things?
Stan, I'm going to need some help on this. They used to receive anywhere from 6 to 10 employee concerns a year quite a few years ago. But that number has continually dropped off over a period of years. And so his response that he feels comfortable with the employees going to the supervisors is, you know, history sort of supports that idea if they are going to that rather than go to the Employee Concerns Program. What we could really state in accordance with what the public mentioned a while ago and what we saw is pretty difficult to evaluate.
Jim, do you know whether they have any survey material that identifies what the employees think of the Employee Concern Program?
I'm sorry. What?
I don't think there.
I was wondering if there was any survey material that reflected the attitude of the employee relative to the Concerns Program.
They were in the process of conducting an employee survey, and I don't remember when that was completed. It was completed after our fact finding. Stan, do you remember when that was completed?
No, I don't know. Pete, do you know? There was a survey done that measured employees' willingness to raise nuclear safety concerns, and that was in the fourth quarter of 2007. And that survey did show that we have a very strong safety culture in people in. And the vast majority of folks do feel very comfortable raising it through the normal channels, through their leadership chain. But I don't believe there has been a specific employee survey on this year.
Also, that survey was just a small sampling of the employees. It wasn't all the employees either, if I remember.
Correct. It was a sample.
He did not share that survey with us at that time. Okay, this report has been sent out one time, and the second time for comments. We've received comments, so I would ask that it be approved.
You've got comments back from the second draft, is that what you're saying?
I've got some comments back from the second draft, but not from everybody.
Okay. So we're in a situation again now where we're confronted with approving a fact-finding report, essentially, without it being completed.
Well, we sent out the second draft.
That's not a good idea.
Well, it's up to the committee.
No, I was talking to Dave. He said we've been there before, but I said that's not a good idea. Mm-hmm. We got into this situation, you may remember, with the Peterson fact-finding report from June of 2007. And we approved that based on completion of the fact-finding report, which took eons to complete. So I'd leave it, I guess, to the good judgment of my two colleagues as to whether we want to approve in advance of a completed fact-finding report or not.
Bob and I have reviewed the comments we have received on the second draft, and I'll hear what Bob's comments are.
I've got a few editorial things I can
Well,
to Jim.
Besides editorial things, if anybody has any more, I suggest we defer approval. But if it's only editorial, we can approve it.
I submitted mine, and they were essentially editorial.
Right, yeah. And I've got Furman's also.
Dave said he has some editorials here.
No, I brought mine with you.
Okay.
Okay.
I guess it's editorial.
All right.
So,
and I would ask for a motion to approve the this particular site
plan. Since it's
plan.
Mine and Jim's, I'll move to approve it with the proviso that non-substantive but editorial comments will be incorporated subsequent.
Mm-hmm.
Second.
Could you give my comment, Jim?
Motion made and seconded.
And Bob and I have reviewed your comments.
In favor, say aye. Opposed. Thank you.
The next report I'd like to report on is the March 10th and 11th fact-finding by Dr. Dave Rawson and myself. The first thing we had to do that day before we could go into the plant tour was that Dr. Rawson had to complete his requalification training for access into the radiological control area, which he did, and I'd already taken mine, so I did not have to. Then we went on another full day's plant tour. They had already completed removing all the four old steam generators and reinstalling the new steam generators, and we heard about that yesterday, so I don't suggest that we cover much detail of that. Ready to continue? Okay, at the end of that day, we attended the leadership meeting for the outage 2R14. That's essentially a very short meeting where they really gather for the day to see what the problems are or what they're doing. We talked about industrial safety trends, talked about human performance trends, daily collection of the radiation dose report, workout reports, histograms, cost projection, determine and agree on the actions to resolve the issues. So the meeting was attended by the appropriate people, and the agenda was there, and they appeared like they proceeded with that meeting the way it should be. The next
Jim,
item.
Jim, let okay. me just mention, Furman raised a couple questions, and they're good questions, about that leadership meeting and going over a report again. I don't intend to change the report, but we didn't answer the questions he raised, and except by implication. I didn't see the very top leadership at that meeting. We had a big meeting with a lot of people there, and I thought our report was accurate. The communication was, I thought, less than ideal at that meeting, particularly acoustic. I could see a lot of people who weren't even trying to hear something said because people at the center table talked like they were talking to the guy 5 feet away, and people in the back row or behind them had no idea what was going on. There was no PA system, no audio system to help. It's a large meeting, and it's not a policy meeting. It's not one that sets strategic changes. It's really supposed to be an information meeting so that other people know what's going on. And that's all it was. And our report says that's all it was. Furman asked, well, you know, so what happens? It's up to the people to be aware of what happens and decide what they do next.
Well, they didn't go into a lot of detail. Furman has some nice comments on it, but they did not go into a lot of details because they wanted to keep the meeting short.
It was a long meeting.
Right. Well, and I assume also that the people who needed to hear were sitting around that table. I think the people sitting in the background like us, who couldn't hear very well, were observers.
I noticed a number of people at the table kind of looking around like it didn't matter what was being said because they couldn't hear it anyway.
Well, that's interesting because just a few weeks before, literally 2 weeks before, Booker and I went to it was right during the outage, and we went to a meeting that lasted about a half an hour, which was basically all the senior people telling each other what happened that day and what they were going to do next day.
Right.
And all the senior managers were there, although it was a fast meeting, and everybody paid attention. There was keen attention.
And we have done meetings like that, too, which were really, I thought.
I mean, Conway was there, and Becker ran it, It was bump, 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 bump. Although they did spend a heck of a lot of time, the one item that took the most time was a minor injury and getting to the bottom of it. And there's a whole lot of other stuff. But I didn't have the impression no one was paying attention to the meeting I was at.
Very different meeting.
Yeah, okay.
Different room,
sure.
Different crowd.
Yeah.
Any other comments, Dave? The next item that we reviewed was the Nexus, which is the Nuclear Excellent Information System project, which is the status of it, really. Is that's been presented at quite a few of our both our fact findings and our public meetings. The date it was going to go in service has been delayed quite a few times. So really, the purpose of our agenda item was just to see what the status of it was. He reported that they had brought in some additional people from outside, contract people who had experience with these systems that helped them bring it on through. They started their training in June of this year, and they're supposed to put it into service in September of this year of 2008. So it looks like they're getting very close to going into operation with it. Next item we had was to talk about the fire protection program, fire protection system, actually, and the status of it. They have had some problems, mostly corrosion problems in the piping, and some problems with the equipment as it is aging. And the system engineer stated that they're still having short-term problems with maintenance, not only in keeping up with the routine maintenance, but also with long-term items that are not being replaced as needed. And that the fire storage tank corrosion cannot be fixed until they fix the condensate storage tanks, which we heard yesterday that on unit number 2, they have fixed the condensate storage tanks. And they'll do the same thing with unit number 1 here in 1R15 in January. He was projecting that the system has been yellow, which is unsatisfactory, but it would be going to satisfactory by the end of March of this year. And the reason for that is the completion of the maintenance rule goal setting for the flow switches and deluge valves. And once they're completed, then they'll be able to go into white. But so we're really talking about management oversight of the self-assessment program and to really review each one of the self-assessments to see if they're adequate or not. They certainly identified some strengths, some positive observations in their weak assessment, but they also identified 4 gaps. One of those is self-assessments are not being effectively employed as a strategic learning tool. They're really not taking action on learning from the self-assessments. Management accountability and using self-assessments for results to achieve expected improvements is not there where it should be. The challenge in logistics of formal self-assessments seems to inhibit organizing and staffing. And lastly, there's a need for more senior leadership and oversight of the program effectiveness. They also identified and had 4 recommendations to address each one of these gaps. They said those should be completed by July of this year. And they're going to do a quick hit assessment, which is a smaller self-assessment, in December of this year to determine how effective their recommendations and their actions to take to improve those are going to be. And that's the conclusion of my report. I've sent this out for 2 reviews. I've got comments on the first review, and I've got 1 comment on the second review. And I guess, Dave, you had some comments you made to me.
Well, all my comments were in the
first review. I received comments from Furman on the second review.
I discussed those with Furman,
yeah.
And we probably won't make
from that. But, Bob, you don't have any comments?
You should have mine as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we're ready for approval.
I would make a similar motion for approval subject to corrections based on information submitted.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion made and seconded. Those in favor, aye. Opposed? Thank you.
At the January public meeting, I reported on the December fact-finding report with Dave Ross and myself. We had a first draft of that, but we did not want to approve it because of the first draft. We've had a final draft of that, and we were going to get approval by email, but I got comments, but I have not received approval by email. So you can either approve it by email, or we can approve it today.
What's your pleasure?
I prefer the email. I want to relook at it to be sure.
Okay.
It was so far back. I just want to make 1 comment around fact findings. I want to read for everybody's benefit the guideline of this committee with respect to fact finding reports. And it says, and it was adopted previous to my me becoming a member here. Fact-finding reports should be made available for committee review by the end of the month following the fact-finding meeting, and all pending reports be closed out prior to or during the next PM. So just a word of advice. I think we've got to shape up a little bit on the timing associated with these fact-finding reports. We've let ourselves, I think, become a bit lethargic about it, and that's not as professional as I think this committee wants to be. So,
yes, sir.
That's all I'd say on that.
Okay, I hear you.
All right, Jim, thank you. Bob, do you have anything to say, regulatory or legal matters?
Only one just very brief comment. I spoke with the governor's office, one of the deputy appointment secretaries. There is an appointment in the works from the governor's office, but they don't expect to make an announcement before June 30th. So it should be just shortly after June 30th. And that's all I have.
Okay. Close to closure now. A public meeting in June of 2009. Kent, before you leave, maybe you can bear with us for a second. A couple of us have looked at June 24th and 25th of 2009, and see if that's something that PG&E can live with, and Furman, check and see what your calendar looks
like. So Wednesday and the Thursday, exactly now, it's just on your heads.
Would be 24 and 25 June.
June 24, 25.
Mr. Chairman, I can check back at the plant and give you a call.
Yeah, that's what we
need.
That's
fair enough.
We just need to, the hotel reservation is the thing that you need to lead time.
Let me take one more second and go over the fact-finding schedule for the remainder of this year. We dealt with this back at the January meeting, but I just want to be sure that everybody's up to speed here. July of this year, Conway Wardell. August, Budnitz Booker.
And we've chosen a date for that.
Okay. September, Mr. X and Mr. Booker.
Yeah, that's changed to me.
Herman and I have changed that.
Okay. Okay. October, Furman and myself, and that would be the monitoring of the E-drill. November is Mr. Budnitz. With Furman. And, yes, sir.
I have two comments. One is we talked about Dr. Rawson's September 18, 2007 fact-finding report with respect to recommendation that DCPP have a consultant help them with their JMC evaluations or something like that. Anyway, I found there were, Dave, there were two recommendations that you made, formal recommendations in that report. And so there's the answer to the question.
So it's in
there. Two recommendations are in that report. That's really all I was going to look at. Second item is I've sent out the assignment schedule and outline for the annual report. I'd like to remind all developers and preparers that the first drafts are due to me July 31st. And that would include the Diablo Canyon Appendix C. That's it.
Okay. Anything else? Anyone have anything else? Well, then the 54th public meeting of the Independent Safety Committee is adjourned.
And Sandy and I thank you all for your sentiments and your gifts.